session number 24898.
And I'm Jean-Pierre Camus, Real 2. You were saying that the airmen were not supposed to go out, but sometimes people did take them out.
There's a person that I can still watch. She's the representative of all our lodges, actually, now. And she comes to all our very few meetings. And she was as young as I was in those days. Her parents lived in Givisi, a nice small, not small, but a nice house. And they kept on having airmen, usually two at a time, and sometimes three. I remember taking three. And they would take them out in the evening to relax and to walk a bit. That's the idea that Georges Poussin develops in his book, that a lot of people close their eyes. Mm. I'm not quite certain about that. Mm. But some people will perhaps that's close your eye, but some people wouldn't be bothered. They wouldn't know. Mm.
Did you think at the time that the airmen looked distinctive when they were moving? Yes. Well, and you mentioned the American shoes and the
American size.
Size, yes.
Size, because they were all tall. Mm. I remember walking up the Boulevard Saint-Michel. I was a bit taller than I have shrunk a bit, but still. And with three or four of those huge men, even Germans went as tall. And I remember something that happened to me. Getting out of the metro at Saint-Cyr-de-Menthon with three Englishmen. Red hair, moustache, typically English, or Irish, or what?
Scottish, perhaps.
And with a little package. Each has a little package there, all the way on. One went through, the French police were there. One went through, I went through, and the one next after me was called, "What have you got in your package?" And silly me, I turn around and say, "C'est biscuit." You hadn't seen a biscuit for 4 years, 2 years at least. And the policeman let him go, and the next one too. So there, I must say,
you were lucky.
I was lucky, but I was sure that he knew what was on. Mm.
Was there anything else about them besides the size or the colour of hair? I mean, that might have given them away to a keen observer.
The worst were the ones who could speak French.
Now, why was that?
Because they could speak French with an accent, and perhaps. Of course, this, the German soldier didn't bother, because of course many of the officers could speak English, of course, in those days. English was until the Nazi, English was taught. It was the first language, I think, they taught in Germany. So. Isla. I don't think I had much trouble. Oh, yes, we're taking the metro. We had to tell them, because the metro was packed, of course. There were no buses, there was no cars, so the metro was always packed. And the metro was the first class was for the officers, German officers, and everybody else was packed in the metro. So I was to tell them, if you see me come down, you come down. If you can't come down, you get down next station and wait for next train. You have to tell them, they must have been disciplined. You had to make them understand that it was dangerous.
Were most of them well disciplined and biddable?
Actually, of course, they hadn't fallen in Paris, so they had fallen somewhere in the north of France or east or west, and they had to gradually get into a place, usually a farm, which farmer, of course, would or send them to next farm or look after them. Try to find a way of reaching a réseau to take them away. Therefore, they had already understood that you had to hide.
How did you get to hear about them when they were on their way to Paris?
Well, there was a whole chain of of course, that wasn't my business, but my business was to take them in Paris, usually. I did go and fetch them from other places. But usually, a man in the resistance, in the resistance of some spot, let's say, around about Lille, would take them to, let's say, Saint-Denis. And Saint-Denis, either we would go and fetch them, or somebody would take them from Saint-Denis to Paris.
Who was actually giving you your instructions about how many airmen there were and where they were going to be delivered?
Well, that was all by radio.
Yeah.
We had radio men. They got in touch with the English radio, and then told them that we had so and so and so and so and so, so many. And and also another, you must meet one of our radio men. And then saying that we sent so and so and so and so, from numbers, names, over.
But how were you getting your information day to day? Was it Brucine who was telling you what to do? And how did he do that? Was that by face-to-face contact?
Yes, telephone too.
Oh, telephone.
Telephone.
When you were speaking on the telephone, did you employ any sort of system of code?
A package.
Ah, a package.
Because it was during the occupation, of course, we had... many people had relatives who lived in the country, and they sent a package of goods. So package was a word that could easily pass by, because nobody would think of something, a package. I have two packages for you, I have one package for you.
Did you ever think that your telephone was being tapped?
I had no telephone.
You had no telephone?
I went to telephone at the doorkeeper. She had a telephone.
Yes.
So she never asked any questions. Mm. And one day I lived in a place that was lent to us by a friend of a friend of a friend, I can't remember what it was anyway. He had gone to America. And so we had that place in 14th arrondissement. And I lived there with three or four of our boys, and one day I was going down and I saw the we call it the Vert Cathedral, you know, the glass on the door which you can't see through, but you can see
Okay, yes.
And I said, please. Ah. So I went up again and woke up one of our boys who was called Johnny, the police. And he got his trousers on and went through the window. Climbed down through the window. We were all ready for that kind of thing. And so in the evening, he went, I don't know where, but I spent the day out. And in the evening, I called my doorkeeper and said, the people who came this morning, are they gone? Oh, yes, it wasn't for you, it was for the man upstairs.
So false alarm.
So back we went. All sort of little tricks like that. It's so strange.
What sort of things?
Because you never think. That she looked so silly, that doorkeeper. I'm sorry for her to say that, but she looked so dumb. And yet.
She wasn't dumb.
She wasn't that dumb, but she knew most probably what we were doing about.
And you mentioned you had some boys living there, some of the... Now, what sort of things were they doing? What were their tasks?
Same thing as I did, except that their job was conveying on the train.
What, out of Paris and south?
Down to the Pyrenees. Mm.
Did you ever have airmen about whom you were suspicious for any reason?
Suspicious.
Did you ever have, you know, because there is always the risk of infiltration, isn't there, into a network?
Yes. But I was out of this business. Mm. Actually, it's in the book. There were two men called themselves Dutch. They were Dutch, and it was out of me. It was when Brusin went back to England, and at that time it was Yves Alain, who was called Grégoire in those days, and Grégoire thought he must get rid of those two. And we were not very very military sort of persons, and he missed them.
Ah.
Luckily, because they were really Dutch, poor things. And I don't think they had much, but they were in the hospital for a few days and out again. It's all in there.
Mm. Yeah. Did you ever carry a weapon?
No. As I say, I did my little job, my little part. Mm. And never killed anybody.
Mm. What sort of person was Grégoire? What were his characteristics?
something I would like to speak about that.
Oh. Now, there was also an occasion, I think, in November 1943, when there was an infiltrator, and I think two members, George Gilmour and Madeleine Mello, were arrested. Were you disturbed by that affair?
No. I know she was arrested, so we cut out all people who knew Madame Mello. Madame Viam, who knew Madame Mello, she was very cheap. I suppose she's been younger than me at the time. She was very bitter about that because I took over all her. She did the same thing I did, but I took it over.
So you
had to. Every time somebody was arrested, it was the idea that we must not stay in relation with anybody knowing or having known the person arrested.
So they'd be isolated completely. Mm-hmm. How did you get to hear about people being arrested if they were caught by the police or the Germans?
It was very quick. Very quick. The question about Madame, the family, Wet, you've heard about that from the Piri, from Madame Piri?
No.
Michel, Wet. Now, Madame Angel, was my age also. We were very young. We were all around about 20, 18, 20. We were all very young. The recruits were mostly done at the lycée.
The Army Cap.
So Michel Angel was a student in those days, and she lived with her mother and father. And mother and father used to lodge airmen. And besides, they used to make false identity cards. So that's what happened to them. And that's why I said that George said, you must not do anything else besides what I'm asking.
Just one function.
Just one function. So, of course, you know about the SDO.
The STO?
SDO. The Germans had a recruiting men about 20 years old and women 21 to send to Germany to work in replacement, of course, of all the soldiers who work in the armament factories. And they, of course, said, go to Germany, you will be well paid, and this and that, and whatnot. And some went, and some didn't want to go. So they had to get some new identity cards with false age, false names and false age. So the family went to Champagne. M-O-O-T. Produce a card for one, and he said to another, oh, you go to the vet and they'll do a card for you if you don't want to go to Germany, and is it the second or the third anyway? I guess that okay. And the whole family was taken with two airmen. Monsieur Mouet, Madame Mouet, Mademoiselle Mouet, who is Madame Manuel, and they left the boy, who was 12, 14 years old, there and then. And a priest they knew, the curé de Saint-Roch, went with his, as I said, with his robe and his prayer book to save them, and he was taken too. They never came back. Madame Wett and Mademoiselle Wett came back after over a year and a half of deportation. Mr. Wett died there, so did the priest. As to the Americans, they were two Americans. As to the Americans, they were taken to as prisoners of war. They're still in contact with us too, I think, at least with one. And, well, that's one of the sad stories. Mm-hmm. And actually, except Madame Melo, Madame Melo was working before Boussin took over with another organization, probably Comet, if I remember clearly. Mm. But, so, next time, one of our boys was arrested, and went through interrogation and the bath and whatever, but he managed to get away, pretending he had a rendezvous somewhere, and he managed to run away.
Did he get a bit clear away?
Yeah, well, that's also, as soon as that was done, of course, he was not to work with us anymore. Mm. That was, Boussin was damaged by that. Mm. He didn't come. Well, there we are. You get all these in that book if you have the courage to read it. I haven't the courage to translate it.
Boussin says in the book that your main route originally was through Spain.
Yeah.
But in the winter of 1943-44, and then the winter of 1944, that route was closed because of the snow. And they had to develop other routes of getting people away. Did you know about those changes of route?
No, we always send them by the Pyrenees, except there was one tribe through Brittany, but that wasn't during the winter, that was more or less at the beginning.
Mm. Now you said you had a narrow escape at the metro when the policeman called out, and you said that the airman following you had got a biscuits in the package. Did you have any other close calls or near misses?
I don't think so.
What happened then in the late summer, autumn of 1944, when the Allied forces were approaching from Normandy? Did that bring about any changes?
Yeah. As I told you, my mother was very ill. Mm. So when Boussin decided that I think he was called back to England, and he said, "Who wants to come? We go through the Pyrenees and go back." Our job is over. Oh. So I said, "Well, I don't want to go. I don't want to leave my mother." So I joined a friend of ours who worked with Boussin, and actually who had who looked after a factory. because his father-in-law was Jewish and had to get to go to high. So he looked after the factory and offered the factory for radio. And that man, Ronnie Toyo, was an officer, and he trained his workmen for the in case of the liberation of Paris, in case of an insurrection. So when Boussin and all of my friends went back to England, he said, come with us for the liberation of Paris. And I still had one boy, an English boy, Patrick Moher, who it was too late to send over. So he came and did the liberation with us.
Was he a pilot or a crewman of some sort?
He wasn't a pilot, I don't think. Mm. No, he was a gunner, I think.
An air gunner?
No, I think so. I have his... I can tell you that. Well, Patrick, when we stayed friends for years and years, he died 3 or 4 years ago. Mm. But we kept in contact all the time. He was a very nice boy. And, well, anyway, I did a bit of the liberation of Paris.
You said that the workmen in the factory were trained, and what sort of training could they be given?
Well, they had guns, I suppose, and they were hidden somewhere, and I didn't think much of that, but anyway, that was the end of the story, actually. Yes.
I mean, do you know if they had a plan that was part of a larger plan for a general rising in the whole of the city?
Yes, actually, yes, we were, he was under the he was not a general of those days, L-I-Z-E, I think.
What actually happened to you? What did you do on the day of liberation then?
I was on the telephone at the time, because funny enough, during the liberation of Paris, telephone went on.
Mm. What sort of messages were you receiving and sending on the telephone?
One from Delizy and another HQs.
Mm.
Well, of course, I went on the barricade a bit.
Where was your barricade?
7th arrondissement. Mm. There's a plaque there. Mm. We lost a boy, a very good boy, very unfortunately. What was his name? Peter what? Marouge.
What actually happened at that barricade? What was the aim of the barricade? Was it simply to take control of the street?
To prevent the Germans to go through.
Yeah. Did they try and go through?
Well, of course they tried. They tried, and sometimes their hands up, and sometimes of course, firing. That's how Peter Nazi was killed. There again. Georges Boussin, although he had gone to England and closed the réseau, he didn't like the idea that when he told him he'd gone,